You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Towards the end of last week, the government announced a number of measures aimed at expanding the available support services for rough sleepers. One of the five immediate actions announced by Housing Ministers Chris Bishop and Associate Housing Minister Tama Potaka included expanding the Housing First program to fund up to 300 additional social homes for people already engaged with Housing First but still sleeping rough. However, both the Green Party and a number of city missioners have said that this wouldn't be enough to accommodate the total number of people on the social housing waitlist. Additionally, earlier this week, Green Party MP Benjamin Doyle recently announced their resignation from Parliament. Doyle announced that the reason for their resignation was a series of threats and ongoing abuse they'd received in March onwards, spurred by comments made by NZ First leader Winston Peters about posts made on their social media account. And last Thursday, statistics released by Immigration NZ revealed that approximately 20,980 people in Aotearoa had overstayed their visa, following a previous study in 2017 estimating the amount of overstayers at around 14,000. In response, Immigration Minister Erica Stanford announced a series of crackdowns on immigration overstayers and changes to the Immigration Act, which included allowing criminals to be deported for serious crimes even if they were permanent residents for up to 20 years, and triggering deportations for providing false or misleading information. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, we spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March to discuss all of these issues. So to begin, what was the Green Party's reaction to the government's measures to expand social support services for rough sleepers?
Housing First is a good policy, but the reality is the government literally pushed people out from emergency housing and onto the streets and cancelled thousands of state homes from being built, effectively increasing homelessness. 300 additional Housing First places, so drop in the bucket for a problem that they have made worse. And so our call to the government is to reverse the changes to emergency housing that has meant more people are sleeping rough on our streets, build enough public housing, and yes, support Housing First policies as well.
So what would be an adequate number of social homes that the government should build to support the number of rough sleepers in Aotearoa?
We have shown through our green budget that this government and any government can choose to build enough state homes to clear the public housing waiting list. We've shown that we can build over 30,000 state housing homes in the next 4 years, and we think the government should be aiming for a similar amount. The truth is that 300 Housing First placements will mean that thousands and thousands of people will continue sleeping rough in our streets or live in cars or overcrowded homes that are making them sick.
Additionally, the new social homes that are going to be funded will be leased from the private rental market instead of being built anew. Do you think this is an effective way to increase the total amount of social housing in New Zealand?
It's actually far more expensive in the long term to be leasing from the private market as opposed to building state homes that we own. The truth, again, is that this is a government that has sold off state houses, has stopped the building of more state housing projects, which has not only resulted in more people sleeping rough in our streets, but has meant countless of construction jobs have suddenly disappeared, leaving more people unemployed. This should be a government that should be building with pride more state homes that are warm and healthy for our communities so that we can end the housing crisis.
The fourth and fifth actions in this announcement included the Ministry of Social Development assessing all beneficiaries going into social homes and encouraging MSD staff to use greater discretion when assessing emergency housing applications. Do you think that these actions could be used to scrutinize those on the housing waitlist and subsequently limit the amount of people receiving social housing?
The government's existing policies already create huge barriers for people trying to access emergency housing. Like, for example, they've doubled down on a policy that basically blames homeless people for causing their own homelessness. So they're measured against whether they contributed to their own homelessness to begin with. This has resulted in more people being declined for emergency housing. And so long as these policies remain, everything else that they're trying to do will be a drop in the bucket because they haven't removed the biggest barrier to accessing emergency housing that they created in the first place.
And in comparison, would you like to reiterate the Green Party's housing policy and how the Greens would address the number of rough sleepers on the waitlist?
We will build tens of thousands of state homes to create also thousands of jobs as part of that. The Greens will also put in place policies that will support people currently living in rental homes, such as our rental warrant of fitness and rent controls. And we will reverse this government's barriers to emergency housing, acknowledging that emergency housing isn't the ideal solution, but until we build enough state homes and we get rents to a place that people can afford, emergency housing, unfortunately, is something that people will continue needing.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Green Party MP Benjamin Doyle recently announced their resignation from Parliament. After joining the party in October last year, Doyle announced that the reason for their resignation was a series of threats and ongoing abuse they'd received in March onwards, spurred by comments made by NZ First Leader Winston Peters about their social media posts. Next, I'd like to ask, what was the Green Party's initial reaction to Doyle's resignation announcement? And do the Greens stand by their decision?
We stand by Benjamin's decision to resign because what they have endured, and I have seen it firsthand as the Green Party's muster whip, as other parties call it, no one should have to put up with those levels of threats. Benjamin has done a huge amount of work to advance issues relating to our rainbow communities and has also actually shone a light on the failures by ACC to support our communities as well. We will miss Benjamin, but our focus right now is supporting them and their family because they are still enduring and continue to endure a level of violence and death threats that no person or person in Parliament even should be enduring.
Do you think that any additional actions need to be taken to address death threats and abuse received by MPs?
I think parliamentary security has done a really good job at working with us to support Benjamin. We're really grateful for that level of support. But Benjamin's resignation shows that there is still more work that needs to be done to tackle the discrimination that queer people face in our communities and the scaremongering that bad faith actors wish to promote as well.
Do you think that Winston Peters bears some responsibility for the hate that Doyle received?
I think every politician should always be mindful of how our own actions may inflame discrimination that groups that already face marginalization because of their sexual orientation, gender, ethnicity, class status may face. And absolutely, the truth is that when politicians in positions of power use their influence to, for example, as Winston Peters have done, to scapegoat migrant communities, there are real-world consequences, not just for the individual that politicians may choose to name, but actually for the broader community, because it gives a free pass to people on the ground to basically mimic that very same discrimination that people in power choose to talk about in Parliament.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Last Thursday, statistics released by Immigration NZ revealed that approximately 2,980 people in New Zealand had overstayed their visa, following a previous study in 2017, which estimated the amount of overstayers at around 14,000. In response, Immigration Minister Erica Stanford announced a series of changes to the Immigration Act, which included allowing criminals to be deported for serious crimes, even if they've been permanent residents for up to 20 years, triggering deportations for providing false or misleading information and crimes committed before coming to New Zealand, amongst a number of other changes. So next, I'd like to ask, what was the Green Party's reaction to both the statistics on overstayers and the response from the Immigration Minister?
The new statistics are just what they are, right? Like, the government has chosen to use a different methodology to arrive to that number. But what it tells us is that there are thousands of people who have fallen through the cracks and haven't been adequately supported to regularize their immigration status. Having worked with countless of people who are deemed overstayers to stop their deportation and support their families, I know firsthand that the great and vast majority of overstayers have deep connections to their communities, and many have also been failed by immigration policies that have not allowed many migrants to have genuine visa pathways, including pathways to residency. When it comes to the government's new legislation, it's really concerning to see the government announcing Trump-like laws to make it easier to deport people on the very same day these statistics come out. That's no coincidence. It's the government that is choosing to push a narrative that overstayers are criminals. And this very same bill does what we criticize Australia for. We effectively are creating our 501 deportee version here in New Zealand, while at the same time, our government goes to Australia to criticize the approach Australia takes of deporting people to New Zealand who have little to no connection to this country and have lived most of their life in Australia, and pushing the narrative that people who commit these crimes in Australia should face the consequences there.
So are increased pathways to long-term residency the best way to address overstayers in New Zealand?
So New Zealand has introduced amnesties for overstayers in the past. This is something that we are calling for right now, and that we have a regularization program that governments can activate in order to support people who have been failed by our immigration policy. I also want to note that Pacific overstayers continue being overrepresented in these statistics, and that is no mistake. This has been a result of government decisions that have made it hard for Pacific families to find a home here in Aotearoa, despite our regional location and our ties to Pacific countries. And I want to note as well that the calls for an amnesty are not new. We've been pushing for many years, as well as Pacific leaders, particularly off the back of the Dawn Raid apology.
Right. So just going off what you just said, are our current residency pathways and immigration processes possibly leading to increased overstaying in Aotearoa?
They are, because for many workers or people with family ties to this country, there's simply no genuine visa pathways for them to own those connections that they have to this country. And if we're going to be calling ourselves a Pacific nation, we should have immigration policies that honor and acknowledge our relationship to the Pacific. And when we are seeing thousands of Pacific people, for example, finding themselves without an immigration status and living in the shadows, more at risk of exploitation and disenfranchisement, and less able to access services when, for example, flooding strikes in Auckland or we face a pandemic, it tells the government that more needs to be done to support members of our communities, many who have been living here for many, many years, to have their immigration status regularized.
Among the new law changes announced by Erica Stanford also included increasing the penalty for migrant worker exploitation from 7 to 10 years. Do you think that this adequately addresses the issue of migrant worker exploitation and balances out the other measures that she announced?
It's a drop in the bucket when it comes to actions being taken to migrant exploitation, because at the very same time, this government has made it harder for people who face exploitation to receive support. They cut the length of time that exploited migrants can access the one visa that exists for exploited workers. And so it's laughable to be just increasing these penalties by a little bit, but while at the same time cutting support for exploited migrant workers, who should be at the very center of policy decision making, because at the end of the day, when someone is exploited, and when I talk about exploitation, I mean, you know, from wages not being paid to literal physical violence being inflicted on them, they need our support, not a government that is simply making deportations easier.
And that was Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez-March talking to us about the government's announcement to expand social support services for rough sleepers, Green Party MP Benjamin Doyle's resignation from Parliament, and Erica Stanford's recently announced measures to crack down on overstayers.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.